About an hour after dinner, everybody was dozing around, some in their chairs and some in their rooms, and it got to be pretty dull. Buck and a dog were stretched out on the grass in the sun, sound asleep. I went up to our room and judged I would take a nap myself. I found that sweet Miss Sophia standing in her door, which was next to ours, and she took me in her room and shut the door very soft and asked me if I liked her, and I said I did. And she asked me if I would do something for her and not tell anybody, and I said I would. Then she said she'd forgot her testament and left it in the seat of church between two other books, and would I slip out quiet and go there and fetch it to her and not say nothing to nobody? I said I would. So I slid out and slipped off up the road, and there weren't anybody at the church except maybe a hog or two, for there weren't any lock on the door, and hogs likes a punchin' floor in summertime because it's cool. If you notice, most folks don't go to church only when they've got to, but a hog is different. Says I to myself, something's up. It ain't natural for a girl to be in such a sweat about a testament. So I give it a shake, and out drops a little piece of paper with 2:30 wrote on it with a pencil. I ransacked it, but couldn't find anything else. I couldn't make anything out of that, so I put the paper in the book again, and when I got home and upstairs, there was Miss Sophia in her door waiting for me. She pulled me in and shut the door. Then she looked in the testament till she found the paper, and as soon as she read it, she looked glad. And before a body could think, she grabbed me and give me a squeeze and said I was the best boy in the world, and not to tell anybody. She was mighty red in the face for a minute, and her eyes lighted up, and it made her powerful pretty. I was a good deal astonished, but when I got my breath, I asked her what the paper was about, and she asked me if I had read it, and I said no, and she asked me if I could read writin', and I told her no, only coarse hand, and then she said the paper warn't anything but a bookmark to keep her place, and I might go and play now. I went off down to the river, studying over this thing, and pretty soon I noticed that my nigger was following along behind. When we was out of sight of the house, he looked back and around a second, and then comes a-running and says, "Mars George, if you'll come down into the swamp, I'll show you a whole stack of water moccasins." Thinks I, that's mighty curious. He said that yesterday. He ought to know a body don't love water moccasins enough to go around hunting for them. What is he up to, anyway? So I says, all right, trot ahead. I followed a 1/2 mile, and then he struck out over the swamp and waded ankle-deep as much as another 1/2 mile. We come to a little flat piece of land, which was dry and very thick with trees and bushes and vines, and he says, "You shove right in there, just a few steps, Mars George. Dey's what he is. I seen him before. I don't care to see him no more." Then he slopped right along and went away, and pretty soon the trees hit him. I poked into the place a ways and come to a little open patch as big as a bedroom, all hung around with vines, and found a man lying there asleep. And by jings, it was my old Jim. I waked him up, and I reckoned it was going to be a grand surprise to him to see me again, but it warn't. He nearly cried, he was so glad, but he warn't surprised. He said he swum along behind me that night and heard me yell every time, but dasn't answer because he didn't want nobody to pick him up and take him into slavery again. Says he, "I got hurt a little and couldn't swim fast, so I was a considerable way behind you, towards the last. When you landed, I reckon I could catch up with you on the land, without having to shout at you. But when I see that house, I begin to go slow. I was off too fur to hear what they say to you. I was afraid of the dogs. But when it is all quiet again, I knowed you's in the house, so I struck out for the woods to wait for day. Early in the morning, some of the niggers come along, going to the fields, and they took me and showed me this place, where the dogs can't track me on account of the water, and they brings me truck to eat every night and tells me how you's a-getting along. Why didn't you tell my Jack to fetch me here sooner, Jim? Well, 'twan't no use to disturb you, Huck, till we could do something. But we's all right now. I've been a-buying pots and pans and vittles, as I got a chance, and patching up the raft nights when—" "What raft, Jim?" "Our old raft." "You mean to say our old raft warn't smashed all to flinders?" "No, she warn't. She was tore up a good deal. One end of her was. But they warn't no great harm done, only our traps was most all lost. If we hadn't dived so deep and swum so fur under water, and the night hadn't been so dark, and we warn't so scared, and been such punkin heads, as the sayin' is, we'd have seed the raft. But it's just as well we didn't, case now she's all fixed up again, most as good as new. And we's got a new lot of stuff, too, in the place of what is lost." Why, how did you get hold of the raft again, Jim? Did you catch her? How I gwine to catch her, and I out in de woods? No, some of de niggers found her catched on a snag along here in de bend, and they hid her in a crick amongst the willows. And they was so much jawing about which one of 'em she belonged to the most that I come to hear about her pretty soon. So I ups and settles the trouble by telling 'em she don't belong to none of 'em but to you and me. And I asked them if they go on and grab a young white gentleman's property and get a hiding for it. Then I gin 'em 10 cents apiece, and they is mighty well satisfied and wished some more rafts had come along and make 'em rich again. They's mighty good to me, these niggers is, and whatever I wants 'em to do for me, I don't have to ask 'em twice, honey. That Jack's a good nigger and pooty smart. Yes, he is. He ain't ever told me you was here. He told me to come and he'd show me a lot of water moccasins. If anything happens, he ain't mixed up in it. He can say he never seen us together, and it'll be the truth. I don't want to talk much about the next day. I reckon I'll cut it pretty short. I waked up about dawn and was a-going to turn over and go to sleep again when I noticed how still it was. Didn't seem to be anybody stirring. That warn't usual. Next I noticed that Buck was up and gone. Well, I gets up, a-wondering, and goes downstairs. Nobody around. Everything as still as a mouse. Just the same outside. Thinks I, what does it mean? Down by the woodpile I comes across my Jack and says, what's it all about? Says he, don't you know Mars George? No, says I don't. Well, then Miss Sophia's run off. Dee she has. She run off in the night sometime. Nobody don't know just when. Run off to get married to that young Harness Shepherdson, you know. Leastways, so they spec. The family found it out about a half an hour ago, maybe a little more. And I tell you, they want no time lost. Such another hurrying up guns and horses you never see. The women folks has gone for to stir up the relations, and old Mars Saul and the boys tucked their guns and rode up the river road for to try to catch the young man and kill him before he can get across the river with Miss Sophia. I reckon they's gwine to be mighty rough times. Buck went off without waking me up. Well, I reckon he did. They wan't gwine to mix you up in it. Mars Buck, he loaded up his gun and allowed he's gwine to fetch home a Shepherdson a bust. Well, there'll be plenty of 'em there, I reckon. And you betcha he'll fetch one if he gets a chance. I took up the river road as hard as I could. By and by, I begin to hear guns a good ways off. When I come inside of the log store in the woodpile where the steamboats lands, I worked along under the trees and brush till I got to a good place, and then I clumb up into the forks of a cottonwood that was out of reach and watched. There was a wood rank 4 foot high a little ways in front of the tree, and first I was going to hide behind that. But maybe it was luckier I didn't. There was 4 or 5 men cavorting around on their horses in the open place before the log store, cursing and yelling, and trying to get at a couple of young chaps that was behind the wood rank alongside of the steamboat landing. But they couldn't come it. Every time one of 'em showed himself on the riverside of the woodpile, he got shot at. The two boys were squatting back to back behind the pile so they could watch both ways. By and by, the men stopped cavorting around and yelling. They started riding towards the store. Then up gets one of the boys, draws a steady bead over the wood rank, and drops one of them out of his saddle. All the men jumped off of their horses and grabbed the hurt one and started to carry him to the store. And that minute the two boys started on the run. They got halfway to the tree I was in before the men noticed. Then the men see them and jumped on their horses and took out after them. They gained on the boys, but it didn't do no good. The boys had too good a start. They got to the woodpile that was in front of my tree and slipped in behind it, and so they had the bulge on the men again. One of the boys was Buck, and the other was a slim young chap about 19 years old. The men ripped around a while and then rode away. As soon as they was out of sight, I sung out to Buck and told him. He didn't know what to make of my voice coming out of the tree at first. He was awful surprised. He told me to watch out sharp and let him know when the men come in sight again. Said they was up to some devilment or other, wouldn't be gone long. I wished I was out of that tree, but I dasn't come down. Buck begun to cry and rip and allowed that him and his cousin Joe, that was the other young chap, would make up for this day yet. He said his father and his two brothers was killed, and 2 or 3 of the enemy. Said the Shepherdsons laid for them in ambush. Buck said his father and brothers ought to waited for their relations. The Shepherdsons was too strong for them. I asked him what was become of young Harney and Miss Sophia. He said they'd got across the river and was safe. I was glad of that. But the way Buck did take on because he didn't manage to kill Harney that day he shot at him, I ain't ever heard anything like it. All of a sudden, bang, 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 goes three or four guns. The men had slipped around through the woods and come in from behind without their horses. The boys jumped for the river, both of them hurt, and as they swum down the current, the men run along the bank shooting at them and singing out, "Kill them! Kill them!" It made me so sick I most fell out of the tree. I ain't a-going to tell all that happened. It would make me sick again if I was to do that. I wish I had never come ashore that night to see such things. I ain't ever going to get shut of them. Lots of times I'd dream about them. I stayed in the tree till it begun to get dark, afraid to come down. Sometimes I heard guns away off in the woods, and twice I seen little gangs of men gallop past the log store with guns, so I reckoned the trouble was still a-going on. I was mighty downhearted, so I made up my mind I wouldn't ever go near that house again, because I reckoned I was to blame somehow. I judged that that piece of paper meant that Miss Sophia was to meet Harney somewheres at 2:30 and run off. And I judged I ought to told her father about that paper and the curious way she acted, and then maybe he would have locked her up and this awful mess would never happened. When I got down out of the tree, I crept along down the riverbank a piece and found the two bodies laying in the edge of the water and tugged at them till I got them ashore. Then I covered up their faces and got away as quick as I could. I cried a little when I was covering up Buck's face, for he was mighty good to me. It was just dark now. I never went near the house, but struck through the woods and made for the swamp. Jim warn't on his island, so I tramped off in a hurry for the creek and crowded through the willows, red hot to jump aboard and get out of that awful country. The raft was gone. My souls, but I was scared. I couldn't get my breath for most a minute. Then I raised a yell. A voice not 25 foot from me says, "Good land, is that you, honey? Don't make no noise." It was Jim's voice. Nothing ever sounded so good before. I run along the bank a piece and got aboard, and Jim, he grabbed me and hugged me, he was so glad to see me. He says, "Laws bless you, child, I was right down sure you's dead again. Jack's been here. He says he reckon you's been shot, case you didn't come home no more. So I's just this minute a-starting to raft down towards the mouth of the creek, so's to be all ready for to shove out and leave soon as Jack comes again and tells me for certain you is dead. Laws, I's mighty glad to get you back again, honey." I says, "All right, that's mighty good. They won't find me, and they'll think I've been killed and floated down the river. There's something up there that'll help them to think so. So don't you lose no time, Jim, but just shove off for the big water as fast as ever you can." I never felt easy till the raft was 2 mile below there and out in the middle of the Mississippi. Then we hung up our signal lantern and judged that we was free and safe once more. I hadn't had a bite to eat since yesterday. So Jim, he got out some corn dodgers and buttermilk and pork and cabbage and greens. There ain't nothing in the world so good when it's cooked right. And whilst I ate my supper, we talked and had a good time. I was powerful glad to get away from the feuds, and so was Jim to get away from the swamp. We said there warn't no home like a raft after all. Other places do seem so cramped up and smothery, but a raft don't. You feel mighty free and easy and comfortable on a raft.